that starts with a work session, and we don't have a quorum, so we're not going to start with a work session. We're going to start with House Bill 2426 in a public hearing. And I have a group of three signed up to come up together. Bob, Dick, and Charlie.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chairman, my name is, and members of the committee, my name is Robert Udzila, and I'm appearing on behalf of the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. And in my written materials, I indicated, along with the Oregon Association of Defense Counsel, jointly support the proposed amendments to House Bill 2426-1. I would like a little time to clarify that the information that I received this morning about the joint support from the Oregon Association of Defense Counsel as a unit, in fact, is true. I know Mr. Bodiefeldt, a prominent member of the defense bar, is here personally to testify in favor of the bill. The amendment that we have is simply an attempt to simplify the application of a rule of law announced by the Oregon Supreme Court in a case called Sanford versus Chevrolet Division of General Motors. That case held that the concept of comparative fault applies to products liability claims, that is, that a plaintiff's own negligence may be used by the jury or by the trier of fact to reduce his or her recovery in a strict products liability claim. The problem with the decision is that it is written in an extremely theoretical way, and the application of its main principle, that is, the comparison of a plaintiff's fault with a defendant's fault in manufacturing a defective product, has become cumbersome at best and extremely impossible to work with at worst for both judges and trial lawyers. It is the intention of the proponents of the amendment that the method of comparison of fault announced by the Supreme Court in that decision be modified without changing the substantive law of products liability. This amendment would make that very simple. The trier of fact simply compares the defendant's percentage of fault with a plaintiff's percentage of fault. Under the amendment, instructions to the jury and verdict forms would be much simpler to craft and yet will retain conformity with the legislative mandate that the principles of comparative fault should be the law in Oregon. Thank you very much.
Yes, I'm Dick Bodiefeldt. I am a defense lawyer. I am pleased to join with my brother, Mr. Udzila, in support of this amendment. I would have to say this is not an earth-shattering piece of legislation, and nobody is likely to go down in history whether they support or oppose this. It is not intended to change substantive law. It's a procedural change that we urge. Frankly, the concept of comparative fault is a very simple, workable, understandable concept. And nobody has ever had any trouble with it until Justice Lindy wrote his majority opinion in Sanford versus Chevrolet. All we're asking, all we're suggesting, all we really want to accomplish is to take that simple issue and keep it simple and urge the trial bench and the trial bar to treat comparative fault in the products context the same way it's been treated in any other context. And that is it, pure and simple. If we wanted to be more blunt and more direct, we might propose a legislation which would direct the bench and the bar to disregard the reasoning and the dicta in the majority opinion in this case. And if you want to read on this, read the concurring opinion of Chief Justice Peterson. Now, we don't write legislation that way, but if somebody wanted to know what we really had in mind, basically, that's what we're saying. Keep it simple. You won't keep it simple if you read and try to understand the majority opinion. I am a defense products liability lawyer primarily. I have never been able to identify any two lawyers who can agree on what Justice Lindy said in his majority opinion, let alone agree as to how the jury should be instructed. As Chief Justice Peterson mentioned in his concurring opinion, The parties to that case had not even raised the issue. It wasn't briefed. It wasn't argued. It wasn't out before the court. It was just the majority gratuitously exercising their pens and engaging in a theoretical and esoterical dissertation that has not been helpful and, frankly, has been somewhat troublesome to work with.
Mr. Boddy-Felt.
Yes.
This is making a marvelous record. There's a question, Representative Mannix.
Yes.
It is possible for us to specify that it is our intention to effectively overrule what we think is a misinterpretation of the law. It's also possible for us to say that we intend this to be retroactive as to all cases that are not finally decided as of the time of passage of the Act. Are you interested in something like that?
I don't think so, because I think then we would become maybe guilty of the same thing that we're advocating here. We want to emphasize that we do not think the law, the substantive law, should be changed. We don't think that the wrong rule of law was applied. What we're saying is the way it was articulated and the suggestion as to how it should be explained to the jury has proven entirely unworkable, and I think what the legislative history we got, that's about all we need.
Don't you want this to apply to all cases?
Representative Mannix.
How about an emergency clause?
Emergency clause wouldn't be a bad idea. I think it should only apply to cases tried after the effective date of the legislation.
Let people muddle through for the time being, and then we'll clean up the path after the effective date.
Right.
Well, we should probably specify that, though. This Act shall apply to cases tried after the effective date of the Act, so it's clear. One of the things we legislators tend to do sometimes is not make it clear what we want it to apply to, and then the courts will spend a year with appeals trying to decide what it applies to. And that's why I like to address that if we want to.
Well, it's not just legislators. It's those of us who come and advocate should be thinking of that, too. But that is a good point, and I think that we could all agree, certainly those who advocate this, I know of nobody opposed to it. It is not a plaintiff defense issue. It is an issue of importance to the trial bench and bar.
Charles Williamson, yes, I have nothing further to add.
Okay. You want it effective for any cases tried or filed?
I think it should definitely be tried, since it is a procedural issue as to how the jury should be instructed. This is where this legislation would feel its impact, and that's in jury instructions. And I think that tells us all there should be cases tried after the effective date of this Act.
Have cases filed is the normal language we use, but
thank you.
Other comments? Thank you, Representative Mannix.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are there any other witnesses on House Bill 2426? We'll be in work session on House Bill 2426, Representative Mannix.
Chair Bauman, I move that we amend House Bill 2426 with the -1 amendments. Now I'll make some separate motions later.
Thank you. Representative Mannix moves the -1 amendments. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? -1 amendments are adopted. Representative Mannix.
Chair Bauman, I move that we further amend House Bill 2426 to insert an emergency clause and to insert a clause that states that this Act applies to all cases tried after the effective date of the Act.
Thank you. Representative Mannix, does everyone understand the motion? I just want to make sure from the three gentlemen who were here that we're not going to run into some conflict in some complex bit of litigation where there's some dispute as to the commencement of trial. And I don't know if I'm raising an issue that's a non-issue. But I would hate, Representative Mannix, and if there's any other commentary, would you come up?
It would be my intention, as the maker of the motion, that the reference to cases tried would be a reference to a case in which the jury has been impaneled after the effective date of the Act, if it's a jury trial, or a case in which evidence has begun to be presented to the court. I think that's the traditional standard for a judge trial, not preliminary arguments, but the actual presentation of evidence to the court. And if any of the witnesses would like to see a different variation on that theme, I'd be glad to hear from them.
I have one question.
Representative Minnis.
to the maker of the motion, and that is, if we put an emergency clause on this and it becomes effective upon its passage, I guess I'm wondering about whether or not those judges sitting out there making these instructions are going to be aware of the change. And if they're not aware of the change, if they make the determination based on whatever this other scrambled existing law is, whether you create problems or not.
That's a good point. I'm going to withdraw the emergency clause in my motion because there could be confusion if it becomes effective too quickly, and there could be the word may not be telegraphed. So
thank
I'm
you, Representative Mannix. I look forward to seeing your name as an instructor at the CLE on this subject. Any other? So what we have is a motion to add a section to the bill that would make this apply to cases tried after the effective date. Okay. Any further discussion of the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Motion is adopted.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mannix.
I move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. To the full committee, excuse me.
As long as, Representative Mannix, I'll accept your motion that we won't see conceptual amendment that you have proposed until we're in full committee, as long as that's an understanding, the subcommittee. Is there any other discussion of the motion?
Sure, Ernie Calhoun gets a copy of it.
Thank you, Representative Mannix. I will. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Saul?
Yes.
Edmondson?
Yes.
Mannix?
Aye.
Nathan?
Aye.
Bennett?
Aye.
Chair Bowman?
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. We're now in public hearing on Senate Bill 1135. Senator Van Leeuwen, are you here on that? Oh, okay. I didn't realize why you were here. We'll call your bill up next.
Good afternoon. Rich Vile with the Real Estate and Land Use section of the BAR's Legislative Subcommittee. This is a real estate and land use section sponsored bill. I apologize for tardiness, but I do have a summary for the members of the committee. If
have it already.
Oh, okay. Apparently you have that already. It's the same summary that I earlier provided to Ms. Zucker.
Is it correct the Senate approved this bill 29-0?
It was unanimous, I know.
Okay.
If that's how many there are, then
an indication of how much controversy there was here.
Very little.
Let's hope it stays that way.
At the wishes of the committee, I'd be happy to briefly outline each section of the bill. I'm prepared to do so. That's approximately a 10-minute process, but otherwise I'd simply be happy to answer any questions or any particular concerns that you have about provisions in the bill.
I have one question.
Yeah. Representative Mannix and then Representative Edmondson.
Procedurally, I assume this is a bill that was worked over and with all of the main concerned parties involved.
Yes. If I might briefly indicate how this bill came about. The Oregon Condominium Act has evolved for about a decade and a half now. And for the last 4 years, there has been a committee composed of lawyers in the Portland metro area who represent lenders, condominium homeowner associations, developers, and other interested parties, accountants, et cetera, that basically looked through the bill to do the housekeeping that had been long overdue. And this bill is primarily a housekeeping bill. There were a couple of significant areas where the downturn in the real estate market had taught us some lessons that were addressed, such as the ability for banks to take back units and then sell them in blocks to other sellers without having to go through all the disclosure statement provisions. And in particular, the significant economic problems created for some homeowners associations when an owner defaulted on his mortgage, but the mortgage company didn't take the loan back or didn't take the unit back, and the association was left without anyone to look to collect assessments from. Both of those types of problems have been cured in the bill. But it is representative of a cross-section of people who deal in the industry on a daily basis. There are a couple, before we take any action on the bill, there are a couple of minor changes, just wording changes that we caught since the Senate hearings on this, and I'd like an opportunity to point those out before we move forward.
Do that now. And
thank you, Representative Mimics.
Okay. Chairman Bauman, if we could, the first change appears in Section 8 of the bill on page 11 at line 29. This section is a change primarily to allow property to be withdrawn from a condominium. And when the property is withdrawn, it needs to be the remaining property needs to be reclassified. The change would be to add between paren C and the word of, and move the and to behind paren C and indicate paren D. That refers back to the D on page 10 at line 39, and that is primarily to require the land surveyor or architect to recertify that the plat is accurate. It's just a technical change that was necessary. Did you get that change? Okay. The next change that occurs is on in section 19, page 20, at line 26. This is the section that deals with the ability of the association to achieve priority over the mortgage or trust deed if the lender does not take action to foreclose a unit which is in default. Previously, in our discussions and negotiations with the lender's lobby, we had agreed that the lien should be prior to any prior, that's a double statement, should be ahead of any prior trust deed or mortgage, not just first trust deeds or mortgage. The lender's lobby was desirous that this affect both their seconds and their firsts. We caught it in one place, but we did not catch it in subsection 7. So the change is on line 26, eliminate the word first, and on line, just on line 26, eliminate the word first, add the word prior. Same page, on line 44, between the word trust deed and the word prior, we're going to move from line or from page 21, line 1, beginning with the word or, the balance of that sentence on line 1 and run on in line 2 is moved and inserted in line 44 on page 20. I can see that very clearly. I can't explain it near as clearly.
Read it the way it would read?
Yes. Beginning on line 43, the lender has not initiated judicial action to foreclose the mortgage or requested issuance of a trustee's notice of sale under the trust deed or accepted a deed in lieu of foreclosure in the circumstances described in 36 of this 1989 Act, comma, prior to the expiration. Well, we don't need the comma, excuse me. Prior to the expiration of 90 days following the notice by the unit owners association, period. Just moving that language in the sentence to make it more clear. Yeah. Okay. Then finally, one very minor and technical change. Back on page 15, we've got an inconsistent terminology problem. Beginning on line 30, page 15, the word successor declarant should be changed to transferee.
Successor transferee or transferee?
Transferee.
Okay.
Strike successor declarant, insert transferee. Line 33, strike successor declarant, insert transferee. Line 36, strike successor declarant, insert transferee. Line 39, strike developer, insert transferee. Line 40, strike developer, insert transferee. Line 41, strike developer, run on to 42, insert transferee. Line 44, strike developer, insert transferee. Those are all of the technical corrections that we have to the printed bill.
It's nice to know that we can perfect the work of the Senate. Are there any questions?
I have a question, Madam Chair.
Does this law in any way affect vacation or recreational property that is not subject to condominium law?
No. If it's not subject to condominium law, it would not.
This doesn't bring those back into condominium law.
Right? No, it does not.
Madam Chair.
Representative Minnis.
Last session we dealt with this issue in Housing Committee. It was as complex then as it is now. And I thought you guys had all these things wired together then. But the one question I have for you is that we included mobile home parks in the potential use of the condominium law as a structure of government. That's not being deleted.
No, Chairman Bauman, Representative Minnis, we have not made any changes relative to any of the provisions that we dealt with last session, except the one that we had withdrawal of property. That was just a minor addition to those same variable property issues that we dealt with in that session.
Contemplating adding a board to this
board. Yeah, condominium mobile board. No, thank you.
Sure. Other questions? I don't think we need to get into that, Representative Edmondson. Thank you very much. Dave Barrows.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Dave Barrows representing the Oregon League of Financial Institutions, and I've also been asked to speak for Mr. Bronner of the Oregon Bankers Association. Both our organizations are in strong support of this legislation, and especially since the Section 19 issue was resolved with negotiations with Mr. Vial and others on the Senate side. You will recall, Madam Chair, and Representative Minnis will recall, that we resisted strongly any movement of unpaid homeowners' assessments and fees ahead of our prior recorded mortgage, and we think last session, and the Housing Committee agreed with our position, and that was not in the big package. We think this time that we have worked out a reasonable position that will protect the interests of both the homeowners' associations and the lenders, and the amendments that Mr. Vial has suggested to Section 19 improve it even more. And we strongly endorse the bill and hope the committee subcommittee will send it to the full committee.
Questions for Mr. Barrows? Thank you. Are there other witnesses here to testify on Senate Bill 1135? Seeing none, we're in work session on Senate Bill 1135.
Madam Chair.
Representative Edmondson.
I have attempted to write down the amendments that were offered by the witness. Perhaps the council has done the same, and I'm prepared to move those amendments as they were stated. I think I, I understood them, and he did a good job of putting on the record the exact words, so I don't think it's necessary to repeat them. With that proviso, I would move the amendments to Senate Bill 1135.
Thank you, Representative Edmondson. Are there any questions about the content of the amendments from committee members? Discussion? Is there any objection to the amendments? The motion is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1135 is amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Edmondson moves Senate Bill 1135 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Clerk will call you, Representative Mannix.
I just wanted to say I think that they've done an excellent job on this bill, and it's nice to have such a neat package presented to us with, obviously, there's always going to be some minor complications that arise that require amendment, but I'd like to commend the people who put this package together.
They are commended. It wasn't even an aggravating opinion by... Clerk will call the roll.
Representatives Calhoun?
Aye.
Edmondson?
Aye.
Mannix?
Aye.
Minnis?
Aye.
Baum?
Yes.
Chair Ballard?
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Up the work session on House Bill 2789. Representative Van Leeuwen, did you need to come up and speak to the committee? Why don't you come up while we look at the amendments? Council.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we last had a meeting on this bill on May 8th, and at that time the committee adopted the amendments that I believe are set forth in the Dash 1 amendment you have before you. At that time, the committee asked that this measure come back before it again so we could determine whether, in fact, these amendments were what they adopted.
Madam Chair. Representative Van Leeuwen.
If I may ask a question where it's limited it to electricity, gas, water, or garbage pickup. What about sewage disposal that's not garbage pickup, or is that a, could there be other utilities that,
I think
in some areas those are separate.
Edmondson, do you recall, there,
well,
Council
I was
can help
just,
us out of
here. The first one that jumps to mind is sewerage.
Yeah. And that's different from garbage pickup, I would think, but maybe not.
No.
Well, yes and no.
Garbage is in the eye of the collector, I guess. So to speak. Maybe, I don't think it would include sewage.
Disposal.
Sewage disposal would be one.
There was an issue that arose specifically around sewage disposal, and council remembers what it is better than I do.
Madam Chair, I believe that there was a, members of the committee, I believe there was a concern about sewage and that sewage should be excluded because of the health aspects about it, that the fact that it did benefit all the property, and I'm trying to, it was the feeling of the committee at that time that it ought to be excluded because of the nature of what was involved.
I think here in several places, I think water and sewage are under the same, billed simultaneously or together.
That's true.
Some places they may be separate, and that was. That would be my only, I really appreciate the rest of the amendments and the clarity that are there, and this one too, but I just wondered if we shouldn't add, what's the correct term, sewage disposal?
The issue that I recall had to do with the situation that would arise if you had a tenant who did not pay for the service, and then the landlord evicted that tenant and rented to a new tenant, and the tenant is in the new tenant is in a position of having to pay a bill or not have the service, and the person from the city came in and testified that the sewage service, disposal service, is not something that you turn off at a switch on the, at the curbside or in the road. But that's the distinction that I recall. I know my water and sewer bill arrive at the same time on the same bill.
Shut the water off your sewers.
Representative Edmondson.
Well, I just think that the policy here is that the consumer of the service should be the one who's responsible for paying for that service. And the unfairness comes in where the landlord, who is not the consumer, or the subsequent tenant, who is not the consumer of that service, is somehow stuck paying for somebody else's consumption, if you will. And I can't see the distinction between sewer service, water service, gas service, utility service, when we're talking in terms of consumer consumption. So I would tend to favor putting sewer service in there, even though it can't be turned off. I think that may be a different problem than what we have here, is where people who don't, we want the cities or the providers of the utility services, which could be a municipality or a private company or a person, to go after their client or their customer. And that's not the subsequent tenant, and that's not the landlord.
Putting on the record what has transpired during our somewhat extended recess.
Well, on House Bill 2789, we've, I think, reached a point where the sponsors of the bill and the interest groups need to confer to come up with some mutually acceptable amendments, specifically dealing with the idea that this should be limited to individual dwellings and not common metered or common service contract situations. In other words, where the provider of the utility services is dealing directly with tenants and not going through a common meter that the landlord is responsible to. Number two, that there should be some notice provision to the landlord that these sorts of transfers of claims would not be allowed unless certain notice provisions have been given. Not requiring notice, not requiring deposits, it's making it clear that the city's going to not be able, it's going to have a limited recovery unless they give notice and have deposits and that sort of thing. Those are primarily the two. The other concept that we talked about, and I think we resolved, is that the home rule concern may not be as great as it once appeared, because this is a matter of statewide concern that we are protecting all citizens equally in the state, and that we're not really attempting to change the structure of local government provided by a home rule charter. And so we're probably okay there on that. And I guess that's, with those three points, we're waiting anxiously for the amendments.
From Legislative Council, what, yes. What I'm going to do, and I want to let the committee and the people who are waiting know what it is that I intend to do, is ask Legislative Council to go ahead and draft those, provide them to Mr. Edmondson and, or excuse me, Representative Edmondson.
Honorable
Mr. Representative Edmondson.
Honorable
and doctor. And to the other members of the committee and to anyone who's here today who's interested. And we will set this over as soon as Council arrives. I will announce when our next work session is. That releases Representative Van Leeuwen, who did not intend at the beginning of this afternoon, I'm sure, to spend her entire afternoon in the House Judiciary Committee, but we appreciate your time and effort and commitment on this bill, Representative Van Leeuwen.
She's no doubt enjoyed herself.
I will speak for Representative Van Leeuwen for the record. Yes, she has had a wonderful time. Thank you, Representative Clark.
I wasn't playing golf, Representative Paul.
Bowling, perhaps. We'll go on to public hearing on Senate Bill 402. Bill Nestle.
Good Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Nestle. I'm here representing the Oregon Department of Justice in support of Senate Bill 402. This bill was originally scheduled for Monday, and Assistant Attorney General Deborah Wilson provided 2 pages of written testimony on it. In the interest of brevity, I think I just introduced this bill as a cost-saving measure of the Department of Justice. What it does is carves out a limited exception to a prohibition in the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure that forbid the employees of any party from serving summons or process in a civil action, as that impacts the state because the state of Oregon is the party to almost all the litigation in which the Department of Justice is involved. Our employees cannot lawfully and consistent with ethical rules of the bar serve legal process. And the idea behind this bill is to provide a limited exception so that our, particularly our support enforcement people, can serve process when people who have support obligations that they are not discharging appear at the department's premises.
Thank you, Mr. Nestle. May I ask if there are any questions from members of the subcommittee? Is there anyone else who's here to testify on Senate Bill 402? There were 3 no votes in the Senate. Do you know what the arguments were in the Senate floor? Were there any?
I do not know what the arguments were on the floor. I do know that there was some fear that the Department of Justice, with this authorization, would create its own positions for process service. By letter dated March 7th to the Senate Judiciary Committee, I stated, and I'm authorized to state today, that we will not assign any positions, nor will we create any positions to serve process. We agree with the process service industry that we probably couldn't do it more cheaply ourselves and under our current contracts with them. The idea is we think it's a waste of time and money when we have people on our premises to have to call up a process server, give them the papers when those people are right in front of us, and pay them for that.
Good point, Mr. Nestle. Is there any, are there any questions, Representative Baum? Is that correct, Mr. Nestle?
Yes and no. The projected savings are only approximately $33,000 a year, but the ease and efficiency of our support enforcement process, I think, is a big motivation of the department in this. We just don't have to jump through those additional hoops. We can serve persons when they are present and available in our offices.
And any questions for Mr. Nestle? Representative Mannix.
Is this a situation where people get letters telling them to come in to see you about a problem, and then when they arrive, you hand them the process?
Madam Chair, Representative Mannix, I have to admit that this is a hardball situation. We do have people that are skating on their obligations to their children, and so I'll just be wide open and say substantially yes.
I love it.
Madam Chair. We have a gift for you.
Representative Clark.
All kidding aside, the Annie Gross version says, in the summary, says limit circumstances under which authority may be exercised. Is it limited to, I read it as saying, including notices and finding of financial responsibility, comma, in litigation and other proceedings in which the state is interested?
I don't read it as saying only in those situations.
Down line 11.
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, that's correct. It also provides authority to do so in other civil cases and in administrative proceedings. The limitations are that it can only be done in or in reasonable proximity to our offices or in cases, emergency circumstances, essentially, when we have to get service in order to protect the interests of the state if somebody is present that might disappear and we may not be able to get effective service.
Here's my concern, is that Fred Meyer has a lot of litigation going on, too, and they could save a lot of money if we just let them, their employees, serve their summonses as well. And, I mean, there's a lot of private folks could save a lot of money if we let them serve their own papers. And I'm trying to figure out why the state is deserving here of this special privilege, and private entities would not be. And you're telling me that most of the time, Fred Meyer is not calling people into their corporate headquarters for judgment debtor exams or other sorts of things.
I don't know what their program is at Fred Meyer. I would like to emphasize that the difference between Fred Meyer and the Department of Justice is Fred Meyer is not subject to the oversight of the Legislative Assembly. And my experience with our support enforcement people is we have the discipline and the training that this won't be abused.
Madam Chair? Madam Chair, if I can
follow up and then represent
the
Nanos.
Yes. I mean, I think what the distinction I'm looking for is that you primarily want to do this in your offices.
That's correct.
And you don't just want to be able to send your people out to serve service the process for normal, run-of-the-mill, garden-variety lawsuits. You want
That's
to
correct.
Avoid the situation where somebody's in your office of having to hire a process server. That's the legislative history I'm trying to make here.
That is correct.
Because I'm not interested in a blanket exception from the department having a different service of process arrangement than private parties.
That's correct. And a practical limitation on that is the fact that two-thirds to three-quarters at least of all of our process involves the support enforcement
right.
area anyway.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Mannix.
Picking up on Representative Clark's statement, what we've got here, this A.N. Gross Senate Bill 402 is misprinted in the sense that the whole subsection 2 of section 2 should have been in boldface, because the limits and circumstances under which authority may be exercised was added by amendment in the Senate, and that whole second part of section 2 is the limitation language, and so it's kind of misleading as to where was the limitation. That was the limitation that they added. And on the serious side, my understanding is that we're really dealing, the distinction with, say, a Fred Meyer is that Fred Meyer does not have special legal authority to enforce the laws of the state of Oregon and is not carrying out those kinds of functions. And you're telling us, I understand, Mr. Nestle, that the majority of the time what you want to use this for is in those enforcement situations.
That's correct, Representative Mannix.
Thank you.
Actually, yeah, Representative Mannix, I think since this is all new language to ORS Chapter 180, it's not a misprint, at least the council suggests that, but that is confusing. Senate amendment.
I see.
Okay, we're all clear on that.
Madam Chair, I have one question.
I want to make sure that we're in work session on Senate Bill 402. Representative Minnis.
How much money will this save?
Madam Chair, Representative Minnis, we estimate it to be approximately $32,700 per year, not per biennium.
Thank you.
Other questions, Mr. Nestle? Thank you. Representative Mannix.
I move the bill to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Baum?
Yes.
Clark?
Aye.
Evanson?
Yes.
Mack?
Yes.
Minnis?
Aye.
Chair Bauman?
Aye.
Motion carries. Monday, the 22nd, will be our work session on House Bill 2789. That's for the record for members who are interested in the bill.
Madam Chair.
Representative Minnis.
I have a motion that we suspend the rules and return to House Bill 2426 for the purpose of revisiting at least one issue. And for the record, the issue is whether or not we've just done with the amendments what the original bill did in its service. And I want to make it, for the record, establish that that's not what we're doing.
Well, I'm going to object to suspending the rules, but I am going to respond to that because that the original bill, let me find it now, said it eliminated.
Just a minute, Representative Minnis. I recognize.
Point of order.
If I could accept the motion, there is a motion that we suspend the rule, and we're now discussing the motion. Representative Edmondson.
My understanding of what we did, Representative Minnis, is that the original bill had its bracketed material that was to be deleted. And it simply said that to delete the words that talked about not greater than the combined fault, basically abolished the 50% rule that if you were more than 50%, you could not recover. By eliminating that language in the original bill, we would have abolished that rule and allowed majority negligence. A plaintiff who is a majority negligent, if I'm saying that correctly, you understand what I'm saying, would still be able to recover. Those lines on the amendments were deleted on line 2 of the proposed amendments. So the law that stayed in 18470 remains the same as it is now. The new section 1 is new language. It's added to the existing law that simply directs how the instructions are to be given. So we have not amended existing law on comparative negligence, which was the purpose of the original bill.
Representative,
in fact, we deleted lines 4 through 10 of the original bill. So it's a good stuff, okay, to be blunt about it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Clark.
One of my questions in looking at this was, I realize that we're not creating a system of pure comparative negligence. I realize that the gut and stuff is much more limited than that. What I'm wondering is, are we, in effect, creating a system of pure comparative negligence in products liability cases?
Representative Clark, I'm sorry. I really should have called and let your office know first, because there was some confusion about the meeting. But secondly, I feel that the record is very clear. We had testimony from just highly respected trial attorneys. I think Bob Odzila and Dick Bodiefeldt testified to really two points. One was that the trial attorneys and the defense attorneys were in agreement on the bill, and secondly, that the bill really didn't accomplish a whole heck of a lot in terms of changing the law, but what it did, and Mr. Bodiefeldt made this abundantly clear in his testimony, is that it clarified some confusion which had been the result of Supreme Court Justice Lindy's opinion in Sanford versus Chevrolet Division of General Motors. That was the testimony, that is the testimony that's on the record, and I am sure that the representation of both of those gentlemen is accurate, that this is not going to create pure comparative negligence in any case. And Representative Clark, I apologize for not having contacted you, because I think this just...
The confusion was not total. I did talk to counsel before I left for lunch. It was my understanding that, and I did call specifically to ask whether 2426 was being revisited or whether it was being... I just need to spend some time with the material.
Would you like to have let's get back to the motion that we're discussing. There is a motion. Would you like to have the rules suspended, Representative Clark, or do you feel prepared to enter your...
Well, I appreciate Representative Menace's motion, and I think he at least halfway was doing that as a courtesy to me. I think rather than drag the committee back through the process again, if Representative Menace won't take offense at this, I'll just go home and do my homework and perhaps if I get alarm bells go off, I may make a motion in full committee if I think that there's something that the committee has totally missed. I have great respect for the committee's opinion, and I don't second guess you. So I,
Madam Chair, we've just accomplished what I had intended to accomplish by suspending the rules.
You withdraw your motion.
Debating, if I withdraw that motion, but I do serve notice of reconsideration of this issue.
So this will not be in front of the full committee on Friday, since Representative Minnis has served notice of possible reconsideration.
I've never heard of that
in a subcommittee.
In a subcommittee.
But
it's a substitute committee.
If you like, well, let me just tell the committee. If you like, this doesn't need to come up on Friday. Let me leave it this way. Representative Clark, if you and Representative Minnis would like for me to take this off of the agenda of the full committee on Friday, if you would let me know before 1 o'clock
I can let you know by
on
5
Friday.
O'clock this afternoon.
would be great.
Let me understand. What's
Representative
the
Baum?
Their trade was doing a rule that embodies the
but read what it says.
Well, it says the claim provided in the part by the way that the rule of R.S. 18.4.7 shall apply.
Have a great deal of respect, Representative Baum, for Representative Clark's ability to read the bill and become comfortable with it, which is one of the reasons I'm extending it so much courtesy.
That's fine.
It's just a matter of trying to make sure that we're doing what we say we're doing. And I think that Representative Clark has some reservations that he'd like to research. And as soon as his problems are alleviated, so are mine. So.
I know. I understand all that. And I did not mean to create this much trouble.
If I may, I'd like to add, Madam Chair.
Representative Mayor.
Why don't we just leave the bill as it is? I'm sure that if there's any substantive concern about it, we could always move to re-refer it to subcommittee as in a full committee. I mean, certainly if someone hoodwinked one of us, we would be glad to do that. I'd be glad to do that. I would like to think that I have not been hoodwinked after 14 years of practice by what I thought was a simple bill. But if I have been hoodwinked...
Reverend Maddox, you can imagine how much fun it would be for me to have discovered that you have been hoodwinked. And to be able to bring that up in full committee, which I don't expect
will happen.
I would
join Representative Clark in bringing it back to committee if Representative Maddox has been hoodwinked.
Yeah. And if it's comparative negligence that we're being hoodwinked, I'll join that also.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other business?
I appreciate the abundance.
Is there any legitimate business?
Legitimate as opposed to illegitimate. I do want to make a motion that we suspend the rules to allow Representative Clark to vote on this House bill.
No objection.
No objection. The rules are suspended. Representative Clark.
Is there any other bills in this?
You would also like your written vote explanation, Representative Clark.
Well, I know I'm very comfortable doing that. I have great respect for the committee's opinion, and I will vote aye. And if I discover that's the wrong vote, then I'll change my vote on full committee.
Duly noted. Any further business?
Madam Chair, just to avoid any confusion and confrontation in the full committee, I'm going to withdraw my notice of reconsideration of the issue in the subcommittee.
Thank you, Representative Minnis. Any further business? Committee's adjourned.
I have liability.
Well, we weren't having any fun at all.